From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News. Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Barbara Slavin, Acting Director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor. Joining me on the show this week are Tom DeFrank, contributing editor at National Journal, and Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, D.C. And here are the issues. Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating whether President Trump obstructed justice by trying to end probes into his former national security advisor and into links between other campaign officials and Russia. The U.S. Senate passed new sanctions against Russia by an overwhelming majority, despite opposition from the Trump administration. North Korea released a jailed American student who appears to have been severely mistreated by his captors. He returned home to the United States in a coma. And finally, a gunman opened fire on a congressional baseball practice, severely wounding the number three member of the House leadership and bringing a rare moment of comedy to Washington politics. Well, gentlemen, a lot of bad news, a lot of interesting news. We'll talk about comedy, but right now we have a rapidly advancing investigation that appears to be pointing directly at the President of the United States. Tom, it appears that steps that President Trump took to prevent himself from becoming a target have now made him a target.
No question about it, Barbara. This is so reminiscent of Watergate. And again, I'm not saying this is Watergate. I'm not making any parallel other than this one, which is in Watergate, it turned out that the crime or alleged crime was less of a problem for President Nixon than the ensuing cover-up. Now, I'm not alleging a cover-up because I don't know. But in this situation, all you can say is Republicans took great comfort in the fact that when former FBI Director James Comey testified a couple of weeks ago, he confirmed that he had told the president, as President Trump had said. Comey told Trump three times he was not a target of the investigation. But that was then. And now there is a new special counsel, Robert Mueller, and the word
former head of the FBI.
Right. Later succeeded by James Comey. The leaks are now out there and have been confirmed that he Mueller, is looking at President Trump's role, which was not the case when Comey was there. So, I mean, this is a problem. And the other thing I thought that was really interesting, Mueller is surrounding himself with a murderer's row of former prosecutors, money laundering experts. It is really a breathtakingly competent group around him. And so it's clear that nothing may come of this. Nothing may come of this, but the scrutiny is going to be far more intense than anyone would have thought, and as President Trump and his partisan advocates would have hoped, that's for sure.
Yeah. Michael, I mean, it was the firing of James Comey, the FBI director, that basically has brought all of this down on Trump's head. If he had not fired Comey, there would not be a special counsel who would have been appointed most likely to investigate this. And I'm not saying that all these allegations would have gone away, but the obstruction of justice charge is tied directly to the firing of Comey and what also has been reported as, how should we put it, inappropriate efforts by the president to get other senior members of the U.S. intelligence community to stop this investigation.
The president has brought this upon himself. Pure and simple. And the thing that's different about this level of the investigation now, or this segment of the investigation, is because it has something to do with him being in office. This has nothing to do with the whole collusion and the campaign. This is an action that was taken while he was president, while he had authority, and while he had the ability to say yes or no or do the right thing. This is turning out to be, I'm calling it the Department of Justice versus the Department of Just Us, which is what I call the White House, this small group of people who he has. He's trying to set up the federal government to be a small family business, but that's not the way it runs. That's not the way it works. You can't demand loyalty from people who take an oath to the citizens of the United States. It just doesn't work that way. Yeah. And it's turning out to be a political hydra for him. Every time he tries to cut off a head, two grow back.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's At some point, someone's got to advise him to let these professionals do their job. They are relentless. They are competent, as Tom says. They're going to get their thing done. And the more you try to stop them, the more they know that there is something, there's some reason that you're trying to do that.
Tom, I mean, would there be so much of an effort to block all this stuff if there was no there?
No.
I mean, that's, you know.
That's the problem. That's a common sense reaction.
Yeah.
You know, as I've said many times before, the one thing I learned as a young reporter in Watergate is, in terms of damage control, dealing with a difficult situation, if you have nothing to hide, don't behave like you do.
Right, get it all out there.
And so whether President Trump or anyone who worked for him then and now have something to hide or not, they're behaving like they do. And I do think, Michael, that there are very competent people around President Trump, lawyers who have been saying to him, Mr. President, politely, shut up.
He can't.
But he can't. I mean, he's now put out a new tweet calling the Mueller investigation the worst political
witch hunt
in the history of the country. And I was amazed the number of Republican members of Congress saying it's not a witch hunt. Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, I mean, people who normally would give a president the benefit of the doubt can't do that. And these tweets are so counterproductive for the president, and his lawyers know that, and they've been saying to him, stop this. But I don't think he can.
Yeah, no, it appears so. I think one of the concerning issues, obviously, for the Trump White House and the Trump family, Michael, is that the investigation is obviously broadening now and going into the finances of people like Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, who appears to have had dealings with the Russians, contacts with Russian bankers, and so on. And, of course, as we learned with the Clinton investigations of the 90s, once you have a special prosecutor, special counsel, whatever you want to call him, and they start, you know, rummaging around, they may find things that they were not expecting. In the end, President Clinton was impeached for lying, right?
Exactly.
About having sex with an intern.
Right.
It had nothing to do with the initial reason for the special prosecutor being appointed. So given the rather complex nature of the Trump organization's finances and the Kushner organization's finances, there's a good chance they may find something unusual, if not illegal, there. Yeah,
there is a chance, as long as there's a special prosecutor. We have, I think, 5 ongoing separate investigations now. But the one that you really, really need to worry about is that special prosecutor. Because as you say, ask Bill Clinton what happens when you have a guy who gets to ask everybody everything and rummage around every single thing and just to pull the loose threads on a sweater. Exactly. Look, we still haven't had Mike Flynn say all that he knows. We still have had Dan Coats and Mike Rogers protecting the president.
The director of national intelligence and the head of the National Security Agency.
Thank you. And also what I thought was just a comic appearance by Jeff Sessions, you know, and sort of...
Oh, yes, we've left him out. The attorney general testified, didn't he?
You could call it that.
Yeah,
it was sort of a combination of stonewalling and selective amnesia.
Yeah. I don't recall.
Which is a phrase you'll never hear anywhere said by anyone except at a congressional hearing. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say, I don't recall. But you heard him say that a million times. Look, this is a big problem now, this special prosecutor, because they do, as we said, have the power to go anywhere and everywhere. And again, I say, you know, this government is not run on loyalty to the president. It's run on a little bit of ambition, a lot of people who feel a sense of duty and a sense of commitment to the government and to the citizens. And the people who feel otherwise and get themselves and treat the government otherwise are the people we see on the front page of the newspaper.
Yeah. Tom, just a few words about Bob Mueller, the special counsel. I mean, he has purple hearts. He is very identified with Republican administrations, right? He came in as FBI director after 9/11. He's another one of these very tall individuals who looks like Gary Cooper or Jimmy Stewart. Is there any percentage for the Trump administration in trying to demean this individual?
No, I think it's very counterproductive, and because nobody's going to buy it. Mueller has got a long track record. He is nonpartisan. He is extraordinarily capable. And if it turns out there's nothing there, he'll be the first person to say there's nothing there. But I think this is very unwise of the president and his partisans to be taking on Mueller. The other thing that I find interesting, Barbara, is former Director Comey made very serious charges, and he did them under oath. He's sworn.
Right.
Swore to the accuracy of these things. And before Comey testified before Congress, he had a long conversation with Bob Mueller, the special prosecutor. Now, you can be sure that, A, Comey told Mueller some things that are not on the public record yet.
Right.
And, B, if Comey had any doubt about the veracity of what Comey told him, he probably would not have opened an investigation into President Trump's...
Oh, sorry, Mueller, rather. Yeah.
Mueller. Mm-hmm. Mueller would not have, have done this. So these are all potential trouble points for President Trump, to put it mildly.
But you don't really, Michael, have to look at anything confidential. I mean, it's all out there on the record. You know, the president fired Comey because of the Russia investigation. He said so.
He said so.
He said so on national television. He said so to the Russian foreign minister, who he met in the Oval Office. You know, so if you fire someone who's investigating you, again, common sense tells you there's something odd about it. You know, he is his own worst enemy.
I would think so. And again, you have directors Rogers and Coates, who have not said what the conversations were when the president, as has been reported, the president called and asked those two, how can we stop this investigation? This has been reported, but they have not confirmed
this. They haven't confirmed it yet.
They have not confirmed this, but we shall see what they have to say when called by Robert Mueller.
Let's go back to unwind the tape a little bit. I mean, one of the issues about all of this was that Donald Trump has been seeking a better relationship with Vladimir Putin's Russia. An element of that that's been discussed, was discussed during the campaign apparently, was relieving sanctions that were placed on Russia because of its annexation of Crimea, its military adventures in eastern Ukraine. Tom, there was a vote in the Senate just a few days ago on a new package of really draconian Russia sanctions. It was 98-2 in favor. So what has happened to that strategy?
One that tells you is the Senate has basically rather dramatically declared that they believe that the Russians were deeply involved in trying to influence the last election, and that they are very skeptical also of President Trump's intentions, hopes of making nicer with the Russians, because this 98-2 vote, it'll probably even pass the House, which is even more sympathetic to Trump than the Senate, and the president's going to have to sign this. And if he doesn't sign it and vetoes it, it'll probably be overridden by Republican votes. It tells you that Trump's dreams of having better relations with the Russians are all but dead.
We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Barbara Slavin of El Monitor, and joining me today are Michael Williams of CBS Radio and Tom DeFrank of National Journal. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. Michael, this package of sanctions is quite draconian. It codifies existing sanctions, including three executive orders, so that it makes it much more difficult or even impossible for President Trump to simply lift them, as you can with executive orders, or to waive them, since it becomes law. And it also spells out what he has to do to remove sanctions. He has to submit a report to Congress explaining the rationale, including what the United States expects to receive in return. And Congress still has another opportunity to approve or reject the president's decision to remove sanctions. So it's a pretty direct blow to his lift sanctions on Russia idea.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as Tom said, this is a pretty strong and clear rebuke of the idea that the Russians are not deserving of punishment. Clearly they are. I mean, the two senators who voted against were Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul. Rand Paul doesn't vote for anything. And you know, Bernie Sanders was saying that he was afraid it was going to hurt the Iran.
Yes, we should mention that a new bunch of Iran sanctions was also mixed into this to give it broader appeal in Congress.
Exactly.
Right?
And I think another interesting thing to note is that within this bill, it actually verbalizes a commitment to NATO. That's included in this.
Or was that an amendment? Right, that
it
was a separate
amendment
that passed 100-0,
yes,
reaffirming United States support for Article 5, an attack on one is an attack on all, which is another interesting way
again,
of
sort of cleaning up after, you know, the president. After,
yeah. You know, who left some doubts about this.
Picking up some loose ends. You know, I take it as a sign of the Senate doing its job. I love the idea, and I've always said that no matter how you feel about this administration or what's happening in politics, the government as a system will work. It needs to do its job. And it's really an affirmation for me. I like seeing this happen. As you say, Tom, this has to land on the president's desk. If he signs it, maybe he looks weak. Maybe it looks like a capitulation. If he doesn't, it certainly looks like there's, again, another issue with why are you giving this preferential treatment to a Russian matter.
Yeah. And, of course, we have this overwhelming Republican control of the Congress and a Republican president. So this kind of dysfunction is really odd. It was another moment. I don't know if you caught this, Tom, but Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, was testifying in support of a budget that has draconian cuts proposed for the State Department and foreign aid and so on. And Bob Corker, who heads the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, a Republican, someone who was considered for the job of Secretary of State, basically said, I started reading this thing and then I said, I'm not going to read this anymore because this isn't the budget we're going to pass. And it was extraordinary.
The phrase that you often hear around budget time in this country, no matter whether a Republican or a Democrat as president, is dead on arrival.
Yeah.
And you have heard that again, that the president's, every budget is political. It is a statement of a president's and an administration's view of how they think things are going to go. But the Trump budget is so draconian across the board, not just at the State Department, that many Republicans have used the DOA term. I mean, the Environmental Protection Agency is not going to lose 40% of its funding, and State Department especially. I mean, Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis has always said, if you cut the State Department budget, give me more troops and more ammunition because I will need it. And so this is not going to happen. And so it's telling. I think in many ways President Trump is still playing to his base, that 30% or so of the country.
It's getting smaller.
It's getting smaller, but it's still there, let's say 25 to 30% of the voters who will believe anything he says and who will support anything he does. He's trying to reinforce them, but it's not helping him in Washington create a much progress on any of his agenda points.
Yeah. I want to turn now, Michael, to a very disturbing story. This one, been to North Korea 3 times myself as a journalist, and this one is just particularly heartbreaking. 18 months ago, there was a young American student by the name of Otto Warmbier who went to North Korea on his way to Hong Kong, where he was supposed to be doing a study abroad program from the University of Virginia. And he grabbed a propaganda poster, and there are many of them, that was in the hotel. And for this, he was arrested and sentenced to 15 years in prison. Something happened. We don't know what. But he came home in a very bad way the other day, if you could fill in the details a little bit.
He arrived. Shortly before he arrived, the family was notified that he was in a coma and arrived at the airport, and an ambulance met him there. He was taken to a Cincinnati hospital, which is sort of the western part suburb of Ohio. It was confirmed by doctors that, first, the claims of the North Koreans were that he had suffered from botulism and then been giving a sleeping pill, and that's what led to this coma. The doctors confirmed in the United States that there was no sign of any active botulism and that he was suffering from severe brain damage, probably due to some cardiopulmonary episode. He'd lost oxygen to his brain, essentially.
Yeah.
They didn't find signs of beating, which is interesting. There were no signs of, like, sort of trauma, physical trauma in that way, but certainly there would be a mistreatment and abuse to have someone get that.
A 21-year-old have a massive stroke or whatever it was,
It's what it does, it just reaffirms, you know, it's a cautionary tale, you know, to me, a way, the sort of brutality and inhuman nature of this regime. It's never, ever, ever to be underestimated. I applaud you for having the courage, I mean, as a journalist to go there, honestly, as journalists to do that, or anyone who does that, you have to take it seriously. I've been to China, Communist China, when it was full on, you know, really aggressive, protective.
Yeah.
And I know that feeling when you show up in a hotel room and the next time you come out of the room, there's an armed guard on your floor.
Sure.
And you know that someone's been in your room after you. These countries are
serious. Well, I knew enough not to make fun of the dear leader or whatever.
Or take a poster off a wall. By
the
way, because everything is serious. Everything is tough. You could call him a hostage if you want to.
Sure.
Will this affect the quote-unquote larger issues, other issues like nuclear disarmament, that sort of thing, the acceleration of their nuclear program? Unclear. Probably not. But it just reaffirms who who you're dealing with.
Yeah, as if we didn't know. Tom, there are three other Americans who are still being held in North Korea. Apparently, they have now been visited, and they are fortunately not in grave health situations. And the story is interesting also diplomatically, apart from the humanitarian aspect. Joseph Yoon, who's the U.S. Special Representative to North Korea, had rare face-to-face dialogue in Norway with North Korean Foreign Ministry officials in order to arrange the release of Otto and to gain access to the other Americans who are being held. And so I guess the question is whether this could lead to something more. President Trump has said that he would be open to direct talks with the North Koreans. We have to remember they have half a dozen nuclear weapons. They've been testing ballistic missiles almost every week, and they're getting closer to the point of testing a missile that could hit the western United States. So, I think that given the grim nature of this story, it may almost make it harder to have negotiations with them way around.
Especially if the negotiations suggest there's any kind of a quid pro quo to North Korea's benefit. I think attitudes about this rogue regime are certain to harden after the reports of what happened to this young college student.
Yeah. I want to turn now to our last topic, which is also quite serious, and that is the shooting that took place at a congressional baseball practice. The Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill have gotten together for years to play this game, and a crazy guy with a gun, with guns, opened fire and seriously, critically wounded Steve Scalise and wounded four others. Yeah, Michael.
Yeah, he was a guy from Illinois, I believe, who had moved to the Washington, D.C. area for about 3 months and had been basically living out of his car and the YMCA across the street from where this game was ultimately to be played. And he'd sort of apparently been sort of stalking and trying to figure out this thing. I did something like I rarely do, which is to go to the Facebook page right after. To look him up. And
was he still there?
The page was still there, and I knew it would have been taken down within moments. And two things struck me. Yes, you could tell something about his politics, but so what? It doesn't matter what his politics were.
Yeah, he hates Republicans.
He's an unhinged individual.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with his political party. Okay, it could have been about anything and everything, but to take up a gun in violence and go shoot people means that you're just not okay. The other thing that really disturbed me was the nature and the tenor of the tone of the discussion that was going on. People were posting comments to his page real time, and you could barely keep up with it scrolling and having the vitriol that people were firing at each other.
Oh, dear.
From each side.
Yeah.
The nature of our political conversation.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's out of control, but it's getting there.
Yeah, it's quite ugly. It is quite ugly. But
and it does point to the fact, I was just thinking that, you know, we've done so much over the last 150 years to preserve our physical health. Maybe mental health is the challenge of the 21st century.
Yeah. I was thinking also, you know, there's so many debates about terrorism. What causes terrorism? Is it radical Islam? Is it this or it's that? And I think mental problems are probably the main reason for violence, no matter what the politics or the ideology or religion of the person who is carrying out acts like this. Tom, the baseball game went on. There was a wonderful scene where the Democrats and Republican leaders of the House and the Senate were basically embracing. President Trump made some very unifying remarks. How long will this moment of comedy last?
Well, I'd like to believe it's the start of a better situation, but I don't know. I was struck, for instance, the House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, a liberal from California, was seen at the game wearing a T-shirt from Louisiana State University, alma mater of Congressman Scalise, who was wounded. So you have to hope that there will be this will be somehow a unifying. But I mean, there's just so much vitriol, as Michael has said. You have to hope for the best and still prepare for the worst, I guess. But for a moment at least, and I think it was significant that there were 25,000 people who showed up for this game, an exhibition game.
Right.
And so
for charity. It raises money for charity, yeah.
Right. Well, maybe that's a cause for some hope here. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Indeed. Yeah, I think on that relatively positive note, perhaps we will stop for a change. So I want to thank Tom DeFrank, contributing editor at National Journal, and Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, D.C. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski, and our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Barbara Slavin, acting director of the Future of Iran Initiative and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor. Thank you so much for listening.